From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I will have trouble sleeping at night if Donald Trump is elected. I will also have trouble sleeping at night if Hillary Clinton is elected.
That was the Green Party presidential nominee Jill Stein speaking at a town hall with CNN Wednesday night.
And as despicable as Donald Trump's words are, I find Hillary Clinton's actions and track record is very troubling.
In a first for the Green Party, Stein, its presidential nominee, and Ajamu Baraka, its vice presidential nominee, had a chance to speak with and before the nation on a major U.S. news outlet. Stein used the time to point out that Trump's rhetoric, which has so many Democrats rattled, has actually been matched by Clinton's record.
Donald Trump bashes immigrants and is a xenophobic and racist loudmouth. But Hillary Clinton, you know, has been promoting these wars that have killed a million black and brown people in Iraq, for example. The Democratic Party has become the party of deportation and detentions and night raids with, you know, millions of people deported under Barack Obama. Some of them include the refugees from Honduras, where Hillary Clinton gave the thumbs up to a coup from which thousands of people have been fleeing, who have not been welcomed into this country. And Hillary, in fact, has supported many of the White House policies of deportation and detentions. On, you know, the issue of nuclear war, I am very concerned about trouble breaking out in Syria in this air war that Hillary is threatening to have. So, you know, as disturbing as Donald Trump's talk is, I find Hillary Clinton's track record is actually very much of concern, too. This politics of fear that tells you you've got to vote against the person you most dislike or the person you are most afraid of, that politics of fear has a track record, because a lot of people have been, you know, that's been like the prevailing mythology. You got to vote your fears, not your values. And what has that delivered? You know, all the reasons you're told to vote for the lesser evil, because you didn't want the expanding wars, you didn't want the meltdown of the climate or the Wall Street bailouts or the deportation of immigrants. That's exactly what we've gotten by allowing ourselves to be silent. So in my view, we need to reject the lesser evil and fight for the greater good, like our lives depend on it, because in fact they do.
Dr. Stein's running mate, Ajamu Baraka, pointed to the bipartisan foreign policy consensus that helped to bring us ISIS.
One of the reasons why we have the ISIS threat today is because of the enormous incompetency of U.S. policy in the so-called Middle East over the last 16 years. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about the ISIS threat and then not look at the kinds of policies that help to facilitate the growth of ISIS. You can't talk about your concern about the possibility of imminent attacks in the U.S. and support policies that created a territory in Syria where people were able to train, equip themselves, and be prepared to launch attacks all over the world. So I would invite the American people to look critically at the policies pursued by both the Bush and the Obama administrations that helped to create the problem that we now have. Look, the security issue is real. There's no question about that, okay? And people are concerned about that, and we understand that. But this sort of knee-jerk response in terms of military action, we've got to be very, very critical of that, because this notion of militarism has been sold to the American population. And people, you know, just think that the first reaction is a military one, when what we're looking at is a political and an ideological challenge also that the U.S. foreign policy has played right into.
Recent polls put Stein and Baraka at about 5% of the vote. That predates the nearly 90-minute appearance on CNN Wednesday night. The fact that the two have begun attracting attention nationally has riled the Clinton campaign, with many Democrats using terminology towards them that Margaret Kimberly characterizes in this week's Freedom Rider column as hate. So this week's column, liberal hate for Stein and Baraka. We're talking about, of course, the Green Party presidential and vice presidential candidates, Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka, your colleague at BlackAgendaReport.com.
Yes. Yeah, you know, of course, Democrats don't want, they exist by making us believe that they are the progressive party. And obviously, they would attack anyone who exposes them. And the Green Party does just that by just by existing. So, and of course, there's the 2000 election, and Ralph Nader is still blamed unfairly and inaccurately for Gore's defeat. So you can expect Democrats and liberals to attack the Green Party. But I noticed something lately, the kind of attack, the degree of hatred, I was not exaggerating when I chose that word, directed at the Green Party ticket was extreme. And very personal attacks, lies, smears. For example, they keep claiming that Jill Stein, who's a medical doctor,
right,
is against vaccines. She is not.
Right. Of course.
She's not at all. So that is, and they keep saying that she, despite the, and she clarified it. She just, in a tweet from the Green Party, she just said, I'm pro-vaccine. It was very clear.
Right.
But they keep trying to run with that. Anything, foreign policy, I could go on. But mostly the attacks are not substantive.
Right.
It's just, they're not the Democrats. She's not Hillary Clinton. She could keep Hillary from being in the White House, so we hate her, and you're supposed to hate her, too. Ajamu Baraka, who's written, for, as you point out, for Black Agenda Report, he's been accused of being anti-Semitic. Apparently, someone who is a Holocaust denier, I'd never heard of this person, but he included one of Ajamu's articles in an anthology. So then, of course, they said Ajamu was anti-Semitic. And, of course, he's one of the founders of the U.S. Human Rights Network. He has a long, very long, lifelong history, I would dare say, of defending human rights in the United States and around the world. So that's a lie. But they have to silence them and just discredit them. And the liberal pundits and bloggers are just going into overdrive, attacking the Green Party this time. And that's why I wrote this column.
You know, some of the criticisms are kind of contradictory on you know, the face of them. I'm thinking, for example, of the criticism of Stein on Israel, for example. There are those that say that she's, you know, a closet Israeli or, you know, pro-Israel on the one hand. On the other, there are those that accuse her of being almost, I think actually the accusation is anti-Semitic, but certainly anti-Israel. And none of these ever probe any of the substance of the positions of the Green Party or of Stein as expressed with respect to Israel. You know, you don't have the opportunity generally. I mean, this thing at CNN, you know, was get an hour and a half of airtime. You know, that's like a first. And I don't think they've had that much.
Yes, I can't recall it happening.
Yeah, I don't think they've had that in the aggregate since the beginning of the 2008 election, for sure. Cynthia McKinney was not on in an aggregate amount of on CNN in 2008 for the campaign then. And
I'm
Jill
sure they
Stein,
didn't acknowledge her existence.
Exactly, and Jill Stein likewise in 2012. Other issues, though, that you know, even more, I think, more important, certainly in terms of scale, like the situation with U.S. military bases around the world, the situation with the bailout of the banks and the failure to bail out students, all of these things. You get like these little snapshot hit pieces from Democrats that almost sound like Republicans, like, how would you pay for that and such?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like for many years, many people from various places on the political spectrums have said there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and the Democrats are really living up to it this year. They had the militaristic national convention. They are the ones who using McCarthyite tactics and red baiting, although Russia is no longer communist. I still think of it as red baiting,
yeah,
the way
right.
Russia and Putin are used to vilify anybody. They are the ones they have turned into the Republicans. I mean, this duopoly where they both parties work together, it's now turned into just one. Trump is tanking in the polls. I'm sure he'll still get millions of votes, and there's solidly red states that he'll win. But every indication is that Hillary Clinton is going to win comfortably. But she is doing so by gathering everybody under, as Glenn Ford said in Black Agenda Report, her big nasty tent. So we have Republicans who gave money to Chris Christie and John Kasich and others now giving money to Hillary. We have people on the right being welcomed into the Democratic Party tent. People who used to call themselves anti-war, feeling like they have to support her. And what's going to happen is, and Bernie Sanders having capitulated, she does not have to make any concessions to progressives. So we're going to have a very right-wing presidency, even with Hillary Clinton in office.
You know,
and I think they're terrified, and that's why they have to vilify anybody who points out the contradictions, who points out the lies. And I think that's an explanation for the level of vitriol directed at the Greens.
You know, and one of the things that gets me about the nature of these attacks. There's the one that calls both Jamu and Jill Stein to a lesser degree to task for criticizing Bernie Sanders as being essentially a stalking horse for Clinton. In other words, an ideological mm-hmm. magnet for people who would vote for progressive politics to come vote instead for Hillary Clinton. And as they criticize Jill and Jamu for that, in front of the former Sanders voters, they're actually doing it as, I mean, the condition itself makes this dialogue take place in the first place. In other words, Sanders pulling out and supporting Clinton and telling his supporters to do the same thing. So she's criticized for being anti-Sanders in a condition where Sanders did exactly what he was accused of.
Exactly. And yes, you're absolutely right. So, but these people who didn't like Sanders either, it's very interesting. Now they're defending him.
Right.
And making these charges that she attacked Sanders, who they also attacked themselves.
Yeah.
It's just anything to make them appear strange, to make them appear extremist. To make them look like they're crazy, like there's no reason to pay attention to them at all. But yeah, that's as Black Agenda Report said and others said, he was the sheepdog who was going to herd. His attempt was anyway to herd progressives into Hillary's camp, and now they're afraid because he did capitulate and because all his supporters did not go quietly into that good night. They're afraid of Sanders supporters. Instead turning to the Green Party ticket. So this is why we get this level of lies and attacks on Stein and Baraka. But that's why it was so important that they were on CNN last night and they have a chance to speak for themselves. And in doing so, that can put a lot of this to rest. But, you know, these liberals I have found are very vicious. I don't see them giving up very easily either. But the more exposure they can get, the more opportunities they can get to speak for themselves, the better.
Yeah, you know, In dealing with Hillary Clinton, for example, you know, presidential politics has been, you know, a boys' club from, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. You have some notable exceptions. Shirley Chisholm, for example, comes to mind, and Angela Davis and Lenore Filani and Cynthia McKinney. In terms of main party politics, you know, with the exception of a vice presidential candidate in the 1980s, it's been a boys' club. Mm-hmm. And the political lexicon has these this imagery that reflects that, particularly talking about politicians who were sellouts as prostitutes and worse, but along the same lines. Mm-hmm. And as Clinton's been a candidate, you know, I've seen people get spanked publicly for using that terminology as being inherently sexist, and I think with some good cause, and even the B word. But here we see those very same people who defend Clinton on that basis using the C word with respect to Jill Stein.
Exactly. And it shows the level of their hypocrisy. There is, you're referring to one of the writers for the blog, Juan Kett, who not only is the C word to describe Jill Stein, but called her a piece of crap also. Oh. And the same woman also said, well, it wouldn't matter if Bill Clinton really was a rapist. I mean, I'm like, okay, so these are the big, you know, feminist people, they claim, until someone attacks the people that they want. So absolutely, all of their supposed ethics go out the window. And it turns out they're as political as everybody else, and their ideology doesn't mean much either. So it just raises the question for me of what is it that they really are interested in? Because it's clearly not politics. That they, the other thing I find interesting is that progressives have generally come up with rationales that, you know, one can debate about why we must vote for Democrats. They will say we need a Democratic president to make judicial appointments. You can't take a risk with a Republican. They will talk about Democratic control of Congress. They will come up with the few things that you might be able to argue that we need a Democratic president to do. This year, all that's just been thrown out the window. They don't even talk about that. It's just you must love Hillary. It is a level of, it's almost cult-like. We love Hillary. You have to love her, too. And if you don't love her, there's something wrong with you. Then you're crazy. Or you're an agent for Vladimir Putin. Or you want Trump to win. There's some kind of vilification used to attack anybody who does not want to support Hillary. And that is in place of the information that they used to use to try to defend Democrats. So the level of discourse is getting worse and worse, and to the point where there really isn't any. It's just, as I said in the title of my piece, just hatred.
And the language of hatred, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you point out, this is under the Obama administration, by the way. American police departments keep up their body count. The United States risks war with China and Russia. That, by the way, being an Obama administration foreign policy initiative, that's not inherited from the Bush administration, although there is continuity in policy there. And unemployment is still high, I would say astronomically high, because you have to count the people who gave up looking for work in there, too, and suddenly you're in double digits. And no one discusses any of these issues, and they're cheerleading for Clinton and say nothing against her like they did with Obama.
Right. Exactly. And it's going to be, you know, and all this talk of, and I remember in 2008 when Obama first ran and people, just let him get in. We need a Democratic president. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a first black president? Just let him get in and then we can hold his feet to the fire and then we can make demands. Of course, there were no demands made. And there aren't any demands. Now there's not even any pretense of making a demand with Hillary. It's gotten worse. Don't ask questions. Don't make a demand. If you ask a question, then you must want Trump and you must love Vladimir Putin. And that's all anybody needs to feels the need to say. So there's this incredible capitulation that's gotten more and more pronounced with time. and they don't even bother to come up with issues. That's the problem with Trump being the nominee. He's such a mixed bag. His appeals to white nationalism is the thing that everybody mentions, and I'm not saying that's not something to talk about, but that appeal means that everything he says has been discredited. So when he asks a perfectly reasonable question like, why does the United States have to be Russia's enemy? Or why do we have to have NATO? And his politics on these issues are not mine. But those are reasonable questions to ask. But it just shows you the depth of complicity that Democrats have with Republicans. This, as you just mentioned, this continuity in foreign policy from Republican to Democrat to Republican to Democrat. And now there's no effort even to nibble around the edges in criticizing it. It is just a complete, full-throated support for anything that the Democrats do. And we have a president now who is risking more by using NATO to try to exact regime change in Russia. And by the way, Donald Trump, in his recent foreign policy speech, said he would end this policy of regime change. That is something that progressives, I mean, you might have to point out the contradiction in Donald Trump being the person who says this, but they just ignore it. And that's something that anybody who calls him or herself a progressive ought to be in favor of, and at least point out the difficulty in Trump being the one who says it. But they just ignore it and act like he never said it. And instead, they browbeat everyone into supporting Hillary Clinton, who is a hawk by any standard of and definition of that word. So so these are the problems in Trump being the nominee, and he makes it easier. And that was a long way of saying his appeals to racism have made it easier for these phony progressives to attack anyone who really is a progressive and wants to see a progressive solution to American politics.
And that attack is literally full-throated. The media across the board are dealing with Trump and you know, racism, xenophobia, and Islamophobia, etc. And at the basis of this, you have Dr. Stephen Cohen saying, for example, we are closer to World War III than at any time since October of 1962, and perhaps closer than then. Mm-hmm. That is a fundamental problem for any other policy discussions because, you know, honestly, radioactive vapor doesn't make policy. And that's what we risk reducing the human population to in one fashion or another. That is not in the discussion whatsoever, and except where Trump raises the question. And instead, people that if Trump weren't in the race this year, you would have had Bush or Kasich or Christie or one of those as the candidate. And they would have been painted exactly the same way by the Democrats. But you have Republicans who supported Christie and Kasich financially, as you point out, giving their money to Hillary Clinton instead. And the politicians, the political structure of the Republican Party, who were the great evil only 4 years ago, are aligned with Clinton and her policies, pitching to them and not the base. And yet, these people defend it.
Absolutely. I don't know what she'd have to do. You know, people make fun of Trump because he said, you know, I could kill somebody on camera and people would still love me. But it's true of Hillary Clinton. The only difference between her and Trump is that she would not say that out loud. But I think if she has killed people, she's the one who actually has killed people. The Libya project to destroy the Libyan state, that was her baby.
And she did say it on camera, too.
Yes, she did. And joked about, you know, we came, we saw he died, and laughed.
Yeah.
And everybody acts like that didn't happen. So we see the level of hypocrisy and the reason why the Democratic Party has to go. And, you know, in talking to people about supports for the Green Party, I say now, we are talking about replacing the Democrats. It's been a long time in history. There are parties that disappeared, so it can happen again. We must replace the Democrats with a truly progressive political party, and we can start this year by supporting the Green Party ticket and supporting Green Party candidates all over the country, and get out of this bind of thinking we must support these horrible people who do things we don't even, we say we're opposed, but feel we have to support them to keep Republicans out of office. But that raises a larger issue about what people really want. And I think there are a lot of people who call themselves progressives who really aren't. They want to be accepted by, they want to be part of the ruling class. They want it to be different. They have people they like to see in charge. They're happy with any Democrat, but they're not really progressive. They're not really human rights advocates, and they show it every 4 years when they make excuses for the Democrats. So we have to take, and we're seeing that too in these attacks on Stein and Baraka. There are people who are hypocrites and liars. They don't really care that much about police murder. They haven't said anything about poor people. The New York Times had an article pointing out that neither Trump nor Clinton has said anything about poor Americans who are in the millions. There is no one talking about them, talking about their plight, talking about how to lift them up out of poverty. It is something that is seen as being completely passé. But yet, the people who call themselves progressives will line up behind Hillary Clinton and not deviate, not one inch.
And in terms of seeing some sort of change or perhaps a replacement of the Democratic Party, the soil has certainly got the correct pH at this point. You point out that millions of people voted for the not-so-left-wing Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
You also have the millions that are following Trump come hell, high water, or CNN. And then millions of people who support the people that are in the streets and are themselves in the streets, many of them. In motion, you have essentially a divided but moving forward working class, including the poor. That is the condition necessary, right, for this to change. How do we get there?
Well, I think we get there by we have to start talking about doing what we're doing, making the case for supporting alternatives to the Democrats, in my case, supporting the Green Party, and getting people away from that reflexive fear of not voting for the Democrats, because support for the Democrats is just a huge trap. And we have to talk to people who are involved in movement politics and involving them and of course, listening to their concerns about the electoral process, which has not served them to date. But so we have to bring people in, give people hope. We have to have, you can't get people to move without some optimism. But we have to point out the possibilities that we have with by supporting parties outside of the Democrats and just telling the truth about the Democrats. In 2009, a Democratic president, Senate, and Congress raised the federal minimum wage a grand total of 70 cents an hour, not even $1. So when people talk about it would be terrible for the Republicans to win, well, I don't know how they can be much worse, to be honest. But we just have to keep talking about these things and making the case for the Greens and doing as much as we can to get them and others those opportunities to talk directly to people. Because the Democrats make the case themselves, and that's why they vilify them so much, because they know how horrible they are.
We've been speaking with Margaret Kimberly, her column this week at blackagendareport.com under Freedom Rider, Liberal Hate for Stein and Baraka, referring to the Green Party presidential and vice presidential candidate, respectively. Thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.